Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, the podcast where we explore the intersection of belief, culture, and society. I'm your host, Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everybody.
And Bishop Ben.
Blessings to all.
And Father Matt.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to be diving into a topic that sits at the crossroads of faith and public life, the challenges Christians face when confronted with political violence and disagreements. In a world increasingly divided by ideology, what does it mean to follow Christ in the realm of politics? How should believers respond to violence, disagreements, and division? Stay with us for this in-depth, thoughtful conversation. So let's start off by looking at some of the historical context of political violence and disagreements. Throughout the centuries, Christians have lived with many different political systems, some supportive of Christianity, some hostile, some even violently oppressive, from the persecution of early believers in Rome to the emergence of Christian political movements. The relationship between faith and politics has never been simple. And in the early church, there were many people who were very much pacifist, as well as some who took a little bit of a different approach to Jesus' teachings. And so I'm reminded of all of the Christians who spent time running around in the Colosseum being chased by big kitty cats, which was always fun, I'm sure. Father Matt, do you want to talk about some of the historic pacifism in the early Christian church?
Sure. Something that comes to mind are the Quaker pacifist dissenters during World War I. Being thrown in prison just because they felt that it was unethical and against their beliefs to serve in a war that a lot of people were being drafted to. And a lot of the rhetoric that they heard because of their stances is very similar to what we hear today from people that try to take a pacifist stand. So.
Very much so. And of course, during the Reformation period, we saw the entire, and before the Reformation period, we saw the entire conquest of the Middle East, normally called the Crusades, which were, of course, fun for everyone but the ones on the losing side, of course. And, of course, there was quite a bit of violence between Protestants and Catholics over the years. I'm reminded, Reverend Mark, of as we were growing up, the conflicts in Ireland, for example, between Protestants and Christians. And so there were a lot of violent uprisings then as well. And, of course, Constantine tried to fuse the church and state together, which never works out well. And that left us in a terrible bind. With the church being somewhat, having to be somewhat subservient to the state leadership. What are your thoughts, Reverend Mark?
I just think historically, when you look at the church pulling together and trying to marry state, you have people that are trying to power, you have power-hungry individuals and everything turns into, as they did in the Crusades, everything turns into God wills this. And it turns into whatever realm of the power or the state steps in. It's whatever they want to do. And if you think it's a good idea, or, you know, the person in charge or in power or the people's, that just bring people in line by saying, well, this is God's will. This is, you know, and of course, during the, you know, the Crusades and those periods and the, you know, they didn't have, you know, people didn't have the the Bible and scriptures as we do,
right,
to be able to interpret what, you know, scripture would have to say. But it's always a dangerous, to me, it's always a dangerous, because history teaches us, it's always a dangerous place for the church to be in a position of political power and wielding state power in conjunction with, you know, with trying to operate the church.
Right.
Because... You see a lot of charismatic, word of faith, Pentecostal churches even today manipulating people into, well, this is what God would want you to do, or God tells you to do this, and that's where we get cults, you know, coming from.
Sure.
And when that happens, you know, you have them localized. But imagine that happening with political power, state power backing it,
right,
and how that would move from, you know, hundreds to thousands of people affected to millions in some of these, you know, some of these cults that we have seen come up and be taken down by our government in the last 30, 40 years. So, anytime you try to marry the two, historically, it just doesn't work.
No.
It does not function correctly. And we're kind of at a weird place right now because you don't necessarily have, you know, like pastors running different parts of the government, but you have them deeply embedded with those that are.
Right.
And, you know, and we do have examples of some ministers that have gone on to political offices. But as a whole, you don't have that yet. But there's such a tight knit group that's in there right now that we're as close as we've been in a long time,
right,
to that happening.
And the church has had to confront these kinds of political divides and political violence, even in recent history, with things like the civil rights movement, you know, where, you know, state governments were turning water hoses and dogs on people, you know, beating them, you know, the great example of the Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama. You know, where John Lewis and others were, you know, beaten within an inch of their lives for marching. And the church came out, most churches came out to support those people that were fighting for their rights and to stand up against that political violence. Yes, there were some that didn't, and they supported the government's actions. But for the most part, most of them, you know, sided with Martin Luther King and the others. And, of course, like anti-apartheid efforts in South Africa. And, you know, even to this day now, you know, the marches and the protests against war around the world that continue to go on almost a daily basis across the country, usually backed by, you know, churches like the Quakers, and the Shakers, and a lot of your pacifist churches. The UU Church is also big in that movement, too. So, you know, it's a good thing that the church is standing up against these political violence. So before we move on any further, let's clarify some of our terms. For instance, political violence refers to acts of aggression or harm motivated by political objectives, ranging from riots and assassinations to terrorism or state oppression. Whereas political disagreements, on the other hand, is a clash of ideas, values, and visions for society. And as people of faith, it is crucial to distinguish between opposing unjust power and perpetuating violence. You can have healthy disagreement without destructive division.
Right.
Father Matt, are there some verses right off the top of your head in Scripture that talk about violence that you might want to share with us this evening?
A few come to mind. I don't have the chapter and verses, but there's a few that talk about us ending violence and trying our best to resist violence, you know, beating our swords into plowshares and that sort of thing. But there's also anger, justified anger. Jesus talked about having us, you know, confront our enemies with justified anger to bring about change. Those verses always ring true, but to the ends that we're talking about, there's nothing that justifies some of the things that we've experienced in the past week as far as political violence goes. So,
right. I'm reminded of, say, Peter and Caiaphas's servant, when he cut off the ear of Caiaphas's servant, and Jesus says, you know, put your sword away. Those who live by the sword die by the sword.
You correct. Know? And then heals the servant and restores them to their former glory, you know, right. So.
Right. Your thoughts, Reverend Mark?
Well, anytime that we read in Scripture where you have government coming or the church moving into a situation or, you know, Christ speaking towards the what's ruling and what's going on around him, you know, his default is always coming back to, you know, just living the life towards those individuals that he was sent here to put on display, period. We see his interaction with the oppressive government there, Rome, by healing the centurion servant and being open, you know, not, you know, pushing him away, but being open to doing that. And so it kind of gives you a little bit of an idea of what his interaction would be. His real beef was with all the religious leaders that were overseeing the Jewish people in there in where he was at, lived there in Jerusalem and so forth. So, you know, I can only base and look at how he would interact from the examples he gave us, and that would be to interact with the government and the people in that manner to which he was teaching us to live on a whole.
Right. And even when confronted with his own ultimate condemnation and crucifixion, which was very much an act of political assassination.
Right.
Jesus went willingly. He didn't go kicking and screaming and fighting and, you know, he didn't raise up an army to, you know, wage war against Rome. And so, and Paul reminds us in his letter to the Romans, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone, Romans 12:18.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that gives us a real thought about that. And, you know, the interesting a dichotomy in Paul is that prior to Paul becoming Paul, he was Saul, who went around unaliving Christians.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, and so after his conversion, he very much began to embrace this idea of pacifism, of living at peace with one another, of not getting involved in violent confrontations.
And one thing I want to double back on that you just said, you know, when Jesus was pulled away, you know, didn't raise up an army when he was taken to be crucified. Multiple times in his ministry, he was pressed to, you know, to take authority,
right,
to become king. Are you going to establish your kingdom? They would ask him. How many times he had the opportunity to do those things, and yet he said, no, that's not what I'm here for.
Right.
I'm here to teach y'all how to live after God and to live godly.
Right.
And he had the opportunity multiple times to do that and refused to pick up the sword.
Right.
Per se.
And so a lot of Jesus' teachings also revolved around reconciliation and peacemaking. You know, even to the point that as he hung on the cross, he forgave those people who crucified him. You know,
yeah.
That is the biggest form of peacemaking you can have, is to forgive even those people who are doing you harm. You know, no, you don't necessarily want to go up to them and let them crucify you a second time. But you can forgive them. And you can create a peaceful environment because of that.
That's right.
And we are confronted on a regular basis by a growing sea of violence in our world. You know, and so many pastors, so many churches have stepped forward to say that violence is wrong. You know, the reason we have this topic tonight is that in the past week, we all were witnesses to Charlie Kirk's assassination in Utah. And while we are quick to condemn his rhetoric and his abuse of people, we also are quick to condemn that kind of violence because that kind of violence has no place in our society, and that kind of violence only begets more violence.
Yeah.
And so it behooves us to work to create more peaceful exchange of ideas, which requires us to sometimes suspend our own anger and frustrations in order to have that peaceful dialogue. Bishop Ben, your thoughts?
Well, you know, like we said before in the other podcasts and other discussions throughout the week, regardless of what political view we see, either Republican or Democrat, or however we think about the person, it was senseless, unenlivening. Why should somebody like that be unlived like that?
You know, right.
I do feel for his family and his friends because they're the ones that are truly suffering.
Right. It leaves a great hole in their lives, as well as
right
the fact that now that everything is broadcast around the world 10 times over, they have to live with those horrible images
right
for the rest of their lives.
Think about his family too. You know, right. his mom and dad, his sisters and brothers, they're also affected by this.
So how do we support victims while also speaking truth to power? We'll start with Father Matt.
For me, speaking for the victim would be, you know, especially in this instance, saying what was wrong with the situation, with the act of violence.
Right.
Whether you agree or disagree, as Bishop Ben said, no one deserves to die the way he died. And that we just have no place for that here in our country. But for us to to stand. We need to stand in the middle between the two sides, especially as clergy people, and kind of direct the conversation to be more of a peaceful conversation versus resorting to violence would be the main goal.
Absolutely. I saw Reverend Mark's wheels turning.
Well, we have multiple examples of what to do in the case of extreme disagreement with people, or in the case of extreme wedges and canyons between us and people. What did Christ say? He said, bless those that curse you, pray for those that despitefully use you. First Peter tells us, do not repay evil for evil or insult for insult, but with blessings. And if we're going to be people that intersect and bring our faith into political discussion and bring ourselves into, you know, what's going on around us, we can't lose who we are, and we can't let circumstances change us. We are either people that follow after Christ, that tells us to pray for our enemies, to bless those that cursed us, and the epistle of Peter telling us don't repay evil for evil. We're either those people, or we're just, you know, churchgoers, you know. Right. And if we truly believe that the words and the teachings of Jesus are vital to a world of peace and harmony and love, we take that mindset into our discourse. And when we don't agree with people, we don't repay insult for insult.
Right.
One day, and I'm going to have to really reel this in because this is going into my sermon for tomorrow, but one day we're going to get that, or we're going to be on the sidelines praying that we would have gotten it.
Right.
Because we are getting nowhere with coming back at folks with our anger, with being ticked off, with, oh, you don't agree with me, so you must want me dead. And don't misunderstand me. There are people out there that probably do want certain groups in our society dead.
Right.
But we have to pull ourselves in and realize that not every person in the world that has a disagreement with us wants us unalived, wants us at a place to where you know, that's just not the case. And we have to draw the line between radical individuals and, you know, the people that are inciting, you know, violence towards us versus, hey, I don't agree with you.
Right.
And we have got to learn that. Otherwise, we are going to see the escalation of what we're seeing. I have to take into my conversations those things. I bless people that are on the opposite side of me. I pray for them, and I pray for myself. Maybe I'm missing it. I mean, dear God, what a concept. Perhaps right. I'm on the wrong side.
Right.
I know that is unfathomable for most of us when we're having disagreements, that we might be in the wrong. But we don't ever think that. We think we've got the market and the monopoly on a thought or an idea in a particular area. And honey, sometimes we're wrong, and we need to humble ourselves when we are wrong. And I have another pet peeve of all this stuff. We debate too much. We're debating too much. We're not listening enough. We've got too much debate going. We're trying to throw so much information at people to overwhelm them, and we're not listening to one another to hear where somebody's coming from, mm-hmm. to offer things of substance. So, sorry, that was kind of that was a little bit of vegetable soup there, a little bit of everything.
That's a good point, though, and I want to go back to something you said just a second ago, and that is, you know, we have allowed ourselves as people of faith to take the old road approach of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Yep. We're called not to retaliate against people, you know, and an eye for an eye retaliates against them.
Yep.
And so that's the novel concept of Jesus' teachings were, you know, if someone presses you to go 1 mile with them, go 2. If someone demands your coat, give them your tunic as well. You know, so it's not this eye for an eye that we see going on around us in the world right now. You know, and why so many people are scared after what happened this week is they're waiting for the other shoe to drop. They're waiting for the retaliation to occur. And if we were to say, as a people, as a society, as people of faith, we're not going to allow retaliation. We're not going to be part of that cycle.
Yep.
Then it would change the entire conversation in the nation and the tenor and the tone. And it would bring so many people peace right now. And so we have to do everything we can to cool the embers that are, you know, simmering in our world at the moment. So those were some very good points.
And read the room, as it were. Read the room. If you know, don't jump on social media. I mean, give things time to breathe. We can legitimately debate people that have moved on, that have been political figures, whether it's Dr. King, a president, a pope, you name it. We can debate whether what they've said, what they advocated for, is good, right, or is harmful. We can debate that. But my Lord, when things are flaring like they are, don't give in to feeding it and being, oh, well, he was a nice, he wasn't a great person. I mean, we're sad that this happened, but he, you know, here's this and this. You are feeding it and you're giving into it and you're just, let it breathe, come back to it, because it's right to have those discussions. It's right to examine political, religious figures that have moved on, whether they, you know, moved on naturally or unfortunate circumstances like we just experienced that are horrendous and awful. Right. There's nothing wrong with debating that, but we're at such that tipping point, if we haven't already tipped, that we have got to set tones and put things out there, because there's a lot of folks that are more powerful politically than we are that are not doing that.
Right.
And like Father Matt said earlier, you know, we as clergy have got to help feed into, you know, pumping peace into the world as much as we can and encouraging that.
And that's a good point, too, which, you know, brings us to this whole, the danger of letting politics divide the church, you know. And I want to touch on this, something you said just now, and give kind of a real-world example for those that may not understand what we're talking about. It's okay to say, look, someone like Kirk, his beliefs about LGBT, about women, about people of color were bad opinions. They were harmful to people. They did damage to people. What is not okay is when you're posting stuff like, well, he said empathy is wrong, so I'm not going to give a crap. I'm going to treat people badly because he said, you know, that empathy was wrong. You know, that's where we cross the line. You know, it's okay to debate ideas. It's not okay to dehumanize people.
That's right.
And unfortunately, we're seeing a lot of that dehumanization going on right now in our world. And it's no one political group. It's no one religious group. Everybody is doing it to some degree or another. And it has to stop. You know, we're all human beings created in the image of the Almighty. Yes. And we have to learn to honor what I call that spark of the divine in every human being, because there's not a single human being alive who doesn't have that spark of the divine within them.
No matter how much they aggravate us.
No matter how much they aggravate us. So, so it's important, especially in our churches and our communities, to build bridges, to have that dialogue. And in order to have dialogue, just like Reverend Mark said a few minutes ago, we have to be willing to listen. You know, you can, if you are not listening but only talking, then it's a monologue. It's not right. A dialogue.
That's right.
And that, unfortunately, is what society is focused on today, is monologue. Everyone wants to get up and spew their opinion, but they don't want to listen to anyone else's beliefs or opinions. And they don't respect other people's beliefs and opinions. Father Matt, your thoughts?
Well, just to piggyback off what you're saying, it's true. A lot of what modern social media and the way that people get their news, it's like an echo chamber. Because you're only getting snippets of things that you personally believe in. You're not. There's no longer this, oh, let me find the best news source so that I can get the middle ground.
Right.
There's,
that's right.
There needs to be a way of us refinding middle ground to be able to move these narratives and these conversations forward in a way that's best for everybody and not just one-sided. And that's, I've lost the train, but that's where I was going, was that we need to find the middle road and walk the middle path.
Right.
So.
And social media does not help us walk the middle path.
It does not.
Social media can amplify political disagreements and inflame passions. Christians are called to be salt and light even online. But unfortunately, we give into the temptation to argue or attack when we really should be practicing the spirit of discipline and restraint.
Yes.
Bishop Ben, how do we engage online with wisdom, respect, and the fruit of the Spirit when we're talking with people we disagree? What are some of your thoughts on how we can do that?
You know, that's a very good question. And, you know, it's funny you ask that question, because I was on a podcast last night with one of my friends. He does a circular podcast, and we were talking on this very subject of ramifications of your persona online. You know, everybody has the tendency of putting fuel on the fire.
Right.
In case in point, like Charlie Kirk on the lightning, people are saying the most vile things. You know, I just tell people on the podcast, you know, our words have ramifications.
They certainly do.
And the thing is, they'll come back to get you one day. Not right now, but they'll come back to get you. So you have to think, even as religious people and people as clergy, we have to think, what's in our heart? How do we truly behave? Do we want to put that persona of us being bad, or do we want to put a good leg forward and say, hey, this is not appropriate. Can we do better?
Agreed. And, of course, part of what creates that atmosphere of disagreement, that atmosphere of fighting amongst each other, is the fact that we tend to live in echo chambers now. We surround ourselves with only people that believe the way we believe, think the way we think, and we also allow ourselves to be drawn in by misinformation. And there's a lot of misinformation out there in the world. And it only takes a few minutes to, you know, go and say Google something and find out, is this true or is this not true? And instead of doing that, we are allowing that misinformation to form our thoughts, to anger us, to inflame us, and then we just go off on people and it creates a destructive debate.
Well, we are so geared to instant this, instant that. We're so geared to quick this, quick that. You know, media companies want to be the first to report something. We want to be the first to throw out our unique, quote-unquote, perspective. And we get consumed by things that folks have thrown out there, and maybe they write it up, and something like it sounds like it's legit or whatever, and then you do a quick Google search and you find out, no, this is not accurate,
right,
and so on. And so it's okay to not be the first one to jump up and down and shout from the rooftops about something that you know 5% of. It's okay to let something happen or to let something build with information so that you can have a good foundation to throw your opinion out there, whatever you think. And there's been many a times that I was like, oh, my goodness, it should be this way, this way, this way. Then when all the facts come out, you're like, ooh, boy, I'm glad I didn't weigh in on that on social media and make myself look whatever. So it's important to be okay with sitting back and letting information come to you, fact-checking things, and making sure that you're accurate in assessing the situation, as opposed to being, you know, having a blinder on because you don't have what all's really happened.
Right.
And, you know, I love people in my life and friends or whatever, but I don't necessarily immediately jump on a bandwagon because somebody says, oh, it's this, this, and this. I go do my own homework and just double check. I had a friend the other day send a little note to me or text in a group setting saying, oh, there's been another mass shooting at a place or whatever. And come to find out that it actually didn't happen.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so we were all like worried and, oh my goodness. And then I start looking through, there's nothing. So it's okay to step back and say, let me really see what's going on. Let me do a little digging. And I think we're seeing a lot of that right now with people being misinformed about various people's rhetorics and just, you know, oh, a friend told me this, and they heard it from their friend who heard it from their cousin's best friend. You're right. Going, oh, my Lord. Okay. All right.
The worst version of the game telephone. Right.
Right, exactly.
And it's okay, folks, to unplug from social media once in a while.
Amen.
You know, we kind of live in a society now where we feel like we always have to be plugged in. You don't have to always be plugged in. Sometimes it's okay to take a break for a day or two.
That's right.
The world will not end if you're not on Facebook every single day.
It's like those early cell phone batteries where you couldn't leave them plugged in all the time. You had to take them off.
Right.
Otherwise, the batteries would explode.
Right, right. We're like that. You know, if you're constantly plugged in, you're going to explode at some point. So what is
reading is good. Yes.
Right. Absolutely. So what does peacemaking look like in practice? One of the things that we and as people of faith have is one of our greatest tools for peacemaking is reconciliation and forgiveness. You know, sometimes the biggest way of keeping peace, sometimes the biggest way of fostering peace in a violent society and a society full of disagreements is just to say, you know what? I forgive you. I know you don't mean the things that you're saying. You don't really feel that way. And that's okay. I forgive you. And let it be. Let it go. And one of the hardest things to do, one of the hardest things to do, especially these days, is to pray for our leaders, especially those we disagree with. I'm sure all of us on this panel have had situations where we have prayed for our elected officials, even some of the most innocuous of prayers for them, and had people get angry at us.
Oh, you know? Oh my gosh, yes.
And so we have to, you know, help form those people's consciences to understand this. We're not praying for the person because we agree with them or we support their actions. We're praying for them for their conversion, for their souls, for the betterment of those around them and the world as a whole.
We're stuck with them. I mean, right? I mean, we're stuck with them. And what would be one of the greatest benefits to anybody is to see with clarity and then move in the direction of good. Mm-hmm. And so by praying that God will open their eyes and hearts and show them what's good and wholesome for their lives, and of course, since they're in political positions, the lives of so many, what would be one of the greatest answers to prayer is that they are motivated towards good and godly things. Right. And to focus in on that divine that's inside of them and say, God, let them be motivated towards grace and mercy. Folks, when we pray or we believe or we hope in those types of directions for people, even, I mean, what do you want? Do you want them to continue to go down the path of darkness or go down the path that isn't towards the good of humanity? Is that what we want? So our alternative and our answer is to, I'm going to pray for that person and believe that their eyes will be opened and that God will show them how to rule justly, how to govern justly, and to move in the direction of that which is wholesome and good. And I'll continue to do that. I pray that for people that I voted for. I pray that for people that I didn't vote for. I pray for that for people I agree with. And I pray that for people where I was like, God, just quickly get them out of office. You know, and that keeps our hearts in line.
And, you know, it is our responsibility, too, to help bridge the gap by mediating conflicts. You know, during the Civil Rights era in particular, Martin Luther King Jr. routinely met with both sides of the Civil Rights debate to try to foster some sort of unity and agreement. You know, his work was able to bridge a gap and to convince President Johnson to sign the Civil Rights Act that he had been absolutely opposed to for most of his political career.
Right.
But by sitting down with MLK and with some of the other leaders of the Civil Rights Movement with the president, they were able to turn his opinion and help him see that it was a good thing to do. And so he did it. And so it requires that we sometimes put ourselves in that position of helping mediate to have those peaceful outcomes. Father Matt.
I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment. And mediating means mediating for your community as well.
Right.
People that look and think like you. Especially when you see the conversation going down a path that is not productive.
Or healthy.
I was, you know, going down that path this week with a few people in the church. I posted Father Jeff Hood's call to peace on the Charlie Kirk event. And just people were so ingrained in their rhetoric that I had to finally say, look, we need to stop and actually read what I posted, because it's a good call for all of humanity,
right,
to set aside the tone, have some empathy, and mourn, even though we wouldn't necessarily mourn for the person, and mourn where we are going as a country. It's so important that we don't lose our identity and who we are. And we're at the verge of doing that, I feel.
So looking ahead, how can we as Christians foster hope and unity in these troubled times? What are some of your opinions, Bishop Ben, on how we start fostering that hope and unity?
Well, you know, that's a very good question in itself. And there's much to think about is what's in your heart, you know? How do you control your thoughts, your actions, your comments? Mostly by you know, being kind, you know? It takes less trouble to be kind than it does to be hateful and use hateful rhetoric. So it's easier just to be kind, you know, just have a kind soul. Treat people the way you want to be treated.
And how do we focus on those core values, Reverend Mark, of love, justice, mercy, and humility in our current climate?
I probably would have to fall back to something that a minister friend of mine taught me years ago when I was first starting out in pastoring. And he told me, he said, encourage growth in your congregation by celebrating small victories. Find those small things that you can hone in on and y'all can celebrate together at accomplishing. As hard as it is, sometimes finding the small things that are going on that are positive, that are righteous, and that are that can foster hope, and magnify and amplify those. Whether it is speaking to hope, which is the expectations in our hearts, or finding the small things where people are doing the positives around us in our communities, maybe a political leader that's standing up for that which is just, and, you know, celebrating that. And it's the little things every day that equal big change, and the focus on those things. And because there just seems to be so much that's going wrong, but not everything is going wrong. And that's the hardest part for us to realize, especially if we're constantly plugged in, as you said earlier, to social media, is that there are people out there that are feeding the poor. There are people out there that are standing up for injustice. There are people out advocating for those that are marginalized. And we need to celebrate those people, those moments, those instances, by saying that's righteous, that's goodly, and drawing as many people's attentions to it, even if it's one person. That one person can turn into two people, and those two people can turn into four, and so on and so forth, by stirring up that and fostering that hope inside of people. So even at the smallest thing, you think, oh, that's insignificant, celebrate it. Because right now we need as much to celebrate as we can. And if you're going to be plugged into social media, post more pictures of puppy dogs and kitty cats for a minute. Just make somebody smile for a second and stir some joy up in them. And maybe that's the spark that starts it. You never know. It keeps somebody from falling off the deep end. But as Bishop Ben says, we've got to dig down and spread that kindness way more than we do anything else.
I agree. Well, as we wrap up, let's reflect on what it means to expand our faith in the face of political violence and disagreement. May we be known by our love, our courage, and our commitment to peace. I want to take the opportunity to thank Reverend Mark and Bishop Ben and Father Matt for joining us this evening on the panel. It's always a pleasure to have you guys here.
We appreciate you hosting us.
Same here. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
And because it was such a heavy topic, let's close in prayer. God of peace, grant us wisdom and grace to navigate the complexities of politics with humility and truth. Give us the courage to stand against violence and strength to build bridges in times of disagreement. Unite your people in love and make us instruments of your peace. Amen.
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 Thank you all for joining us this evening for Expanding Your Faith. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share. You can always join us on Facebook at Expanding Your Faith and on TikTok on our Expanding Your Faith channel on TikTok. Until next time, may your faith be expanded in every season of life. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/Expanding Your Faith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.